please rise. Court is now in session.
They plead not guilty.
The defendant is not guilty.
You're the one who's guilty.
Call the first witness.
Is that a question?
Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
I am instructing my client not to answer that question on the grounds of self-incrimination.
Welcome back to the Charleston School of Law podcast in part two with our guest, John Henderson, a 2010 graduate of Charleston Law. And we are jumping into the topic of artificial intelligence. Everybody's in a kind of a discovery phase and finding the best ways. What is your firm doing?
Yeah, right now we're what I would call like high level 30,000 foot view.
Yeah.
Recently, the consensus is that AI is here. This is not a thing that's happening in the future. One of my favorite writers, Peggy Noonan, was writing in the Wall Street Journal the other day, and she had surveyed CEOs, people who are running accounting firms and law firms, and she's hearing that there's going to be, you know, 15 or 20% reduction in the workforce across the banking industry, accounting industries, law industries, all these things. And so you look at that and you think, oh man, on the one hand, that's scary. On the other hand, you look at it and say, whoa, there's a huge opportunity here. We can reduce the cost of legal services while providing a better product. And that's what we're focused on doing. Wesley, my brother, and I run our law office, and we're thinking to ourselves, we are not using AI right now.
Okay.
We do it as like a second backup option.
Okay.
There's so many sort of pitfalls with it that we don't want to be leading any conversations or leading anything with AI right now. But I still have a flip phone.
Okay.
I wish we were using Windows like 98, you know, and like Word 2000 or whatever, you know, it's like.
You're all dial up.
That's right. You know, so if I could have it that way, it would be great. In my mind, I will have made it when I don't have to have a phone or an email address. I don't think that'll ever happen. All that is to say is that I am not an early adapter. I am not somebody who's like, oh, I'm going to be on the cutting edge of this. I didn't go buy a drone. You know? So we're taking a little bit of that approach, but at the same time, we want to be really proactive. So we try it out to try to see how it can impact us. Is it coming to a different conclusion? So we tell all of our lawyers, we're not using AI. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear about it. My brother and I, we're running sort of tests on our own to see whether or not the data that it's pulling, the cases it's pulling, is doing the same thing. There's all over the news, or at least in the legal world, you know, that it kind of creates its own cases or it can take this case and create its own holding and various different problems with it. But as they get these closed, you know, a book of information through LexisNexis or Westlaw, whoever's doing it, there'll be lots of different programs. Then you're going to get like a human putting the data in,
right?
And now it's going to be pulling information for us. You know, that's a huge opportunity for us to really on the legal research front. So it's changing our focus. I would say we are not on the vanguard of using AI. I don't want to be experimental with it. It's our law licenses on the line if it messes up.
Yep.
You know, like I want to be the same reason that I have a flip phone. It's because I'm in charge of the technology. It's not in charge of me. And so I'm not going to be dependent on it, but I'm going to use it as a tool or a resource.
Sure.
So that's kind of our mindset on it. And it's really affecting the way we hire and what we do moving forward.
How does it impact the way you hire and the way you look at prospective associates maybe coming in? Has your ability to, has it changed based on some of this technology and availability?
Here's where I think we are, is that AI can do a great job on the legal research, even brief writing, all of these things that it used to require a human to do. Now, the other side of it is that AI is not going to do a great job getting the information from the client, trying to figure out like what are our goals and meshing those together with how we're going to negotiate or what we're going to do about that case. And so with that in mind, we have determined that we think that it's the intangible qualities, not necessarily the GPA. It's going to be if you have high emotional intelligence, good at getting along with your classmates and your clients, all of those interpersonal skills, I want to see an A+ in those right now.
Maybe people of our age who grew up maybe without technology already had some of those, I guess, soft skills, But some of the students now, it's a little more challenging.
For sure. Good news on that front.
Okay.
Is that we've had amazing law clerks.
Yep.
Could not be happier with the law clerk. I don't know if it's because we're picking well or whatever. You read these books like The Anxious Generation and a host of other books out there.
Sure.
And they would have you think, and maybe it's true, that there's a huge proportion of the population of young people that are just ill-equipped to really navigate adulthood.
Yeah.
You know, without a lot of help. But I haven't seen that come true in our law office. And I think that is for a couple reasons. We're specifically targeting people with a specific group of skills. I love college athletes.
Is it the focus? It's the focus, but
also, like, if you can put the phone down for hours on end and devote your entire, like, being to the win, to the team aspect of that, that's something I can work with. That's amazing. So we have several college athletes that work in our office. Also, like, people who work any kind of job. If you worked at Napa Auto Parts or as a server or whatever it is, like, that's another one. I think these things inoculate you from probably the ills of social media and all, you know, and help you adapt to the real world. If you're done some customer service, you know, are used to answering to your coach and devoting yourself to the team effort, that you have come a long way towards getting rid of whatever the negative aspects are about social media, technology, and all those things. And so now maybe we can marry together, like, hey, you're popular and well-liked and have good social skills, but then also you come from this generation that knows how to use, not be used by, but use technology. Like, man, that's a great place to be. Like, we can do a lot with that individual. So we're really looking at those interpersonal skills, how well they relate to other human beings.
It's so important for our law students to understand that as they apply for some of these jobs. You know, your background as a server, they may not see that as valuable to a potential law job, but you do.
The other thing that happens is problem solving. A guy used to be in the United States Senate. Now, I think he's the president of the University of Florida. His name's Ben Sasse. He wrote a book called The Vanishing American Adult years ago.
Yep.
It was amazing because he was like, I have all these smart kids with very high SAT scores. He had accidentally ended up running a small college for a little bit. And he was like, but they don't know how to decorate a Christmas tree without, like, me telling them how to do it or when to do it. There's no initiative there. That always struck me as like, oh, we don't want lawyers like that are coming to me. Like, why would I hire somebody if they're going to ask me 8,000 questions?
Yeah.
So we've got a guy right now. He's a new lawyer, relatively new lawyer, and he is just the greatest problem solver. And he comes to us like with this. He comes to me when he asks a question, I can say back to him, what do you think we should do? And he already has an A and B option together.
Yeah.
He is so accustomed to knowing, like, okay, where we are going is to Z. You know, like, don't go to my boss with a question about, like, here's my problem. And it's just a marvelous quality to have, to be able to understand, like, what is the problem and have an idea about how to fix it. A lot of times I have to redirect him because he's not thinking about something else, or I have a different idea that might be better. But a lot of times he already has the solution, and I got to say, that sounds great. Do it. The number of clients, if you have somebody is not able to have those conversations and see how to fix it, who are like CCing me on email, suddenly they are like asking me to step in and take over. And I'm like, well, I have my own things to do today. I cannot possibly start stepping in on this.
Yeah, it's not babysitting.
That is exactly right. I get no emails from clients on him. He's bringing me the questions, not the clients who are upset. And that speaks volumes.
It creates efficiency in your workflow have set up for the day.
That's exactly right. And it's not just him. That is, like, when we're thinking about the future of AI and law, it is, how do we, I guess we'll never perfect it, but how do we perfect the customer service element of
it?
And how do we hire lawyers who understand that? It's funny you bring that up, because we have been thinking about, like, what are the personality sets? And, you know, I hate to classify it quite this black and white, but it's like, I can do a lot with some, like, C and B students who have good personalities, because the AI system is going to make that brief and that memo an A+. I don't know that there's room in the future for the person who doesn't have those relational skills, high emotional intelligence. Maybe somebody else can figure out how to use that person, but we can't for the life of us figure out how we're going to deal with the A-plus student who doesn't have a very good personality. Because here's the rub, is that I got to figure out how to get in hours of conversation with a client, how do I get the right information that I need to protect them, negotiate our side of the case? How do I get that out of them? And if somebody isn't eager to want to talk to the client, they're never going to get it. And we're going to end up 2 or 3 years into a case and never make any money on it. The clients can be mad. And
that's a liability then.
We have done a lot. Yeah. So, and we've had those. We've learned these lessons like the hard way. So when I'm looking at law clerks and I'm looking at who I'm going to hire, give me somebody who's well-liked among their peers.
Yeah.
And I can give you a good lawyer.
That guy that you have right now, that he's already A-B and tested it in his head.
You know, I think that it is really that what we noticed, and he was a law clerk for us, is that he got on so well with so many people.
Yeah.
Everyone liked him. He gets on the phone with a client who's upset. That client is much less upset by the end of that phone call. He understands that certain clients want to hear from you. They don't care about the cost of it. They want to hear from you every single week. And so set that on your calendar and do that. High emotional intelligence stuff. That is just understanding how other human beings tick. So in one sense, it is taking a step back. It's like, why don't we get to understanding human nature?
Yes.
Who understands human nature a little bit better?
Yes.
And who we are, what makes most of us tick and that sort of thing. But we get a little bit too niched in to whatever this discipline is, that we don't have this broad perspective anymore. So sometimes highly specialized people lose perspective of the big picture.
Yes.
And so they have a lot to offer. The question that I'm trying to answer is a good lawyer in the future going to be that super technical person who's niched in on this one subject area? Or is that person going to become obsolete? And the person who's actually has sort of the liberal arts degree, the broader understanding, and going to be the pilot at the helm and using autopilot as an assisting tool. So, you know, like that seems to be the way that we're going. And so the super niched in person that has tunnel vision, I don't know if that's useful to me in the future. Maybe it is. I could be wrong, but I don't know if that's useful to me because it seems to me that the computer program is going to do that. AI is going to do that for us. I need the person who's going to be the pilot, who's understanding the entire operating system, not just this one key component. Just sort of to bring clarity to all of that is I'm less interested in that as somebody who's hiring than I am in, do they have the ability to interact well with the client, to build trust with the client, to communicate to the client, like, we're going to battle for you. We're working hard for you so that when we need to ask tough questions or understand what's true and what's not true, that we have a great grasp on that.
As you're moving forward in your own legal practice and your own cases, do you see a day coming where you will use AI for you?
Yeah, it'll come, but we're most certainly going to put very good parameters around it.
Yeah, of course.
We would like it to be and make sure that everybody can do the fundamental work.
Yep.
Kind of like I was saying that I think that the law school should do with the students really is like, show me that you can be a good lawyer without it. And then maybe we'll give you the autopilot tool to help you be more proficient and make sure nothing bad happens.
Yep.
You know, how do you use it as a tool? So we want to make sure that we have the judgment in our lawyers, but they're all, you know, if you give, we've got 4 children and one of them is a 5-year-old and she loves a calculator already. You know, the older two, they have 2 above her and 1 younger there, never use a calculator.
Okay.
But she just heard that, oh, it's way easier on a calculator. And I'm like, what is going on with this child? She's already trying to cut corners, you know? And so it's like, we got to get the calculator out of the house.
Yeah.
We need our lawyers to be able to do that. And then add a skill to help them, like, how can we be more efficient and more cost-effective for our clients?
Right.
That's the stuff. It's like, if you communicate well and you don't surprise people with billing, They may roll their eyes at your bill,
yep.
but they're not going to be mad with you. And then they get a random bill. And that's a disaster.
You love taking those calls. John Henderson, a graduate 2010 here at the Charleston School of Law, has been our guest on the Charleston School of Law podcast, available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, all your favorite audio players. I'm John Struble. That's John Henderson. Have a great day, and thanks for coming on, John.
Thanks for having me.